most alternate historians have some sort of an issue with archaeologists. Now, I don't mean archaeology as a science, not the field itself. I mean the scientists, archaeologists. And from the outside, that distinction's probably kind of silly, right? I mean, if you're into prehistory, why wouldn't you trust the people that are best informed to tell you about prehistory via material remains? But if you are into alternate history, you are well aware that guys like Graham Hancock have been, they try to deplatform him using all kinds of underhanded tactics, lying about what he says, misrepresenting his position, conflating him with white supremacy, just all kinds of crap to do basically anything they can do to deplatform him, they do. So it becomes very obvious that there's some archaeologists out there that are just completely untrustworthy. So when I myself make a video pointing out one of these archaeologists likes to lie a lot, and then a lot of people send that video to his university to try to get him fired, and I say, hey, whoa, guys, you slow that down a hair. I was accused of not being willing to go all the way in order to win the fight. And I get that sentiment completely. However, let me explain really quickly, and if you'll watch the whole video here, I think I can demonstrate pretty clearly my reasoning. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. The following is an open letter to the president and president-elect of the Society for American Archaeology, otherwise known as the SAA. Dear Professors Sandwies and Dorr, I'm writing to express my concern for the growing public distrust of archaeologists. I myself am an interested amateur who is fascinated by archaeology, but I have noticed a troubling trend in the public outreach from archaeologists who attempt to publicize the field, particularly those who come from North America. Despite their actual credentials, it seems they have little credibility with a large portion of the interested public. As the bylaws of the SAA include the education of the public as one of the primary goals, I would assume this is a very concerning issue for you as well. Most people who are interested amateurs or armchair archaeologists are fascinated by the mystery of our origins, much like most professional archaeologists, I would wager. As such, the best button to press in order to educate the public is the mysterious, the tantalizing, the part of our story that still lies just outside of our ability to see. This explains why pseudo-archaeology is so popular. It usually offers some explanation for our past that is more entertaining than dirt and bones, and that answer is almost always just outside the realm of our currently accepted knowledge. Frequently, this puts professional archaeologists attempting to educate the public at a disadvantage, and the response by these archaeologists has been woefully ineffective and, I dare say, inappropriate. The public perception of scientists being a cut above the average human isn't based as much on research and expertise as it is on impartiality. The fact science overturns its previous findings and has a long history of murdering its darlings has, over time, led to the stereotype of scientists being less emotional and more logical than most. This, in turn, has led to science being perceived as a beacon in the dark by the masses. The public has seen the collective efforts of scientists in their fields as a distillation process of ideas, with the evidence being unemotionally evaluated and eventually presented to the public. Archaeologists who intend to educate the public seem to ignore this portion of the reputation of scientists, and this has created the issue that caused me to write this letter. I would imagine that on both a personal and professional level, the inability to usurp the grasp that alternate historians have on the public must be extremely frustrating for the archaeologists trying to challenge them. It can't be easy trying to counter the fantastic with the mundane. This certainly will create emotional moments, and with the discourse being done largely through social media, these emotions become clear to the public and stay in print forever. Oftentimes, these exchanges are extremely vitriolic, and the personal biases become apparent to anyone who cares to look. It is not uncommon to see professional archaeologists who are actively attempting to educate the interested amateur saying things that are disparaging, often as an immediate reaction to a question that sounds like alternate history. I believe this is not only damaging to the reputation of archaeologists at large, but it demonstrates the lack of awareness many of these individuals attempting public outreach bring to the table, which ultimately is a missed opportunity. The answer, as I see it, is twofold. The Society for American Archaeology should make it policy for archaeologists who are attempting to publicize science and debunk alternate historians to 1. Accept that they often will have to leave some mystery intact when debunking a claim, and 2. Refrain from personal attacks. At this point, I believe my reason for leaving some mystery behind while debunking a claim is apparent. When you are holding up a mundane concept next to an extravagant one, in order to captivate the public, allowing for some of the mystery that makes the human psyche gaze in awe is imperative. This is frequently lost in Egypt. For example, one of the most common talking points of alternate historians is a timeline of the construction of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. The claim is the timeline doesn't make sense, it couldn't have been built so quickly. I recognize this is not American archaeology, but this is frequently discussed by the debunker archaeologists in the Society of American Archaeology that we see that I'm talking about now, so bear with me. The carbon dating does suggest the pyramid may have taken 200 to 300 years to build, but Egyptology has an alternate explanation for this disparity. Wood was recycled and burnt. However, this reason is unsupported by other evidence. It's just a means of tying the written records of the pharaohs to the hard data gathered from the mortar without changing the timeline. The manner in which this is portrayed to the public is one-sided and openly biased. The notion of pyramids, at least for a time, were multi-generational projects taking hundreds of years to build, is dismissed out of hand, and the old wood hypothesis is touted as fact. By simply doing what the bylaws of the SAA state should be done, encourage public access to and appreciation of the aims, accomplishment, and limitations of archaeological research, the discussion would both allow for some mystery and present a far less biased face to the public. Another important area this issue presents itself in is archaeoastronomy. That is the study of ancient stargazers and what they saw and believed. In the desire to dismiss the notion dating megalithic sites by the stars as viable, archaeologists frequently dismiss things that are clearly intentional, such as the undulating serpent present at El Castillo in Chichen Itza during the equinox, or the solar alignment to the Great Sphinx in Egypt. This makes these archaeologists appear uneducated or unwilling to accept this line of evidence at all, which is a very bad look to those interested in the topic. I mean, if your target audience is compelled by stellar alignments with megalithic structures, dismissal of the concept completely is clearly not going to reach them. The best example of this is the manner the proposed correlation between the three pyramids on the Giza Plateau and the belt stars of Orion is dismissed by most archaeologists, indeed, and most astronomers, out of hand, when there is work done by reputable astronomers published in reputable journals indicating the correlation is most likely accurate. However, the date of construction found is 4th dynasty, as one would expect from the accepted timeline of the pyramids. The best work of this being done by Vincenzo Orofino in his 2011 paper, A Quantitative Astronomical Analysis of the Orion Correlation Theory. I believe it doesn't take a psychology major to recognize that using this paper to address the claims of a 12,000-year-old Orion-Giza correlation will produce better results than dismissing the correlation outright, as you are dealing with people who accept the correlation exists. Yet this is never done. The concept is mocked by those who claim to seek to educate the public, which results in these people feeling alienated and insulted. This is the missed opportunity I mentioned earlier. I believe an astute educator would utilize their would-be pupils' interests. If a person says, "I believe the stones at Pumapunku were made by ancient geopolymers," the standard approach seems to be mockery. "The geology proves this is wrong. This is long debunked. Why don't you read a book, LOL?" Compare that with "they tested the stones, and these stones have an identical makeup as the stones in the places nearby that we believe they were quarried from." There are other sites where geologists haven't found the appropriate composition in the nearby quarries these places are more likely to give you what you're looking for in the realm of geopolymers. Now, if they researched that site and found out that it's also not geopolymers, then the archaeologists have effectively killed numerous birds with one stone. The hypothetical student not only learned that geopolymers can be tested for and how they do so, but this student also learned where and what to look for either way. They have gotten better at understanding archaeology, and they did the vast majority of the legwork themselves. Best of all, if the mystery of geopolymers dies for that independent researcher, they will have killed it themselves. Their pet theory didn't die at the hands of archaeologists stomping all over it. It died a death of 1,000 slow facts, bleeding it dry of validity. Facts they found themselves in their inspired research. Archaeology has not alienated this person. It has assisted them in educating themselves. More specifically, they feel like it did it themselves. The other major issue I want to bring up is the personal attacks levied against alternate historians, both popular figureheads in the community and random social media users with tinfoil questions. Professor Sandweiss, on November 30th, 2022, you signed your name to an open letter to Netflix from the SAA. In this letter, which was intended to pressure Netflix into reclassifying Graham Hancock's Ancient Apocalypse series as a fiction series instead of documentary, three points were made. The first complained of the way the series portrayed archaeologists. The second point claims that there were large amounts of bad information in the series, but the third reason is what I want to focus on. Hancock is conflated with white supremacy. The letter contains the following statement. The assertions Hancock makes have a history of promoting dangerous racist thinking. His claim for an advanced global civilization that existed before the Ice Age and was destroyed by comets is not new. This theory has been presented, debated, and refuted for at least 140 years. It dates to the publication of Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, 1882, and Ragnarok, the Age of Ice and Gravel, 1885, by Minnesota Congressman Ignatius Donnelly. This theory steals credit for indigenous accomplishments from indigenous peoples and reinforces white supremacy. From Donnelly to Hancock, proponents of this theory have suggested that white survivors of this advanced civilization were responsible for the cultural heritage of indigenous peoples in the Americas and around the world. This is a cleverly worded falsehood. This theory does not date to the publication of Atlantis, the Antediluvian World in 1882. Hancock's underlying premise, which is the same as most modern Atlantis hunters, is hyperdiffusionism, the idea one culture influenced many others, a mother culture, so to speak. This concept was pioneered in modern times by Charles Étienne Brazier de Bobo in his 1862 book, Grammaire de la Langue Quiche, where he posits the Maya are the inheritors of the legacy of the Atlanteans. His contemporary, Augustus Le Plagnon, traveled through the Yucatan in the 1870s looking for further evidence of an Egyptian-Maya connection. He believed that modern civilization began in South America, and in his case, that the Maya were the descendants of the Atlanteans. This information that contradicts the letter to Netflix has been presented to multiple SAA members, including at least one of the people who helped write the letter. When archaeologists are asked about the false origins that they claim hyperdiffusionism came from, they're quick to say, oh, neither de Bourbon nor Le Plagnon claimed a comet was the means of destruction. Look closely at the letter we sent to Netflix. It says comet. This is referencing an entirely different theory. But to the casual observer, or to the astute observer, it is clear the intent of this portion of the letter isn't about the comet. It represents concerns about the stealing of credit for the construction of these edifices from indigenous people. This section of the letter is in fact about hyperdiffusionism. The comet as a means of destruction is incidental. The connecting factor here is iconography and ashlar masonry construction. The use of the word comet is a way to weasel out of criticism and to say, oh, we weren't talking about those guys, we meant this guy, see, comet, when racism is obviously the intention of bringing this man up. Now, to be frank, this looks very dishonest, which is entirely unexpected from a scientific body that has advised the U.S. Senate on numerous occasions. This allows detractors of archaeology to make the factual statement, archaeologists are lying about the history of Atlantis. I don't think that I need to elaborate on why that's a bad look in a debate where one of the main talking points is archaeologists hide information about Atlantis. Of course, there are some people who have and continue to use alternate history as a talking point to promote racism. This is not debatable, nor should it be dismissed. It should be properly targeted, and that is not currently happening. A broad brush of racism is being applied, and this is bad for the public image of archaeologists as well as rooting out racism in the alternate history community. The difference between Graham Hancock and Robert Saphir is massive, but the current narrative from archaeology conflates the two via pedigree, claiming the origins of this concept comes from a man that they did not. This overarching alternate history is rooted in racism trope is absurd, and the public recognizes it for what it is, by and large, a transparent attempt to elicit support from people who do not care at all about the origins of these megalithic structures. It comes across as a desperate tactic, and considering the archaeologists are supposed to have all the evidence on their side, it looks exceptionally desperate. From a public relations perspective, this type of accusation should only be levied when it is clearly applicable. Because this does more than alienate the people who are conflated with racism, it infuriates them. No one likes to be called a racist, and when the evidence for this ignores historical fact in order to just forge a narrative to label someone a racist, it makes the people using that as evidence look horribly dishonest. I am aware the standard narrative is alternate historians only ask about indigenous sites. They never ask why places supposedly built by Europeans are so mysterious. But I would like to give you something to ponder in this regards. There are sites, like Baalbek in Lebanon, or the megalithic temples on Malta featured in Ancient Apocalypse, or the massive Nuraghe in Sardinia, who are said to have been built by Europeans, according to mainstream archaeology, and this is challenged by alternate historians. The one thing you will find in all of the popular sites for alternate history claims is a lack of written evidence regarding the origins of the site. We know exactly when and why the Parthenon was built. We cannot say the same about the Egyptian pyramids that are marveled at by so many. I would hope that this explanation slows down archaeologists who are so quick to label the "all this is stealing credit from indigenous people" narrative. Professors, as you have no doubt guessed by now, I am an alternate historian. As a matter of fact, I happily call myself a pseudoscientist, as I form a hypothesis, research it enough to satisfy myself, and then put that claim out into the world. By not following the same rigorous processes that an archaeologist would, I am engaging in a form of pseudoarchaeology. No, I do not believe in ancient aliens or ancient high technology. I'm always looking for a more reasonable, more mundane explanation for fascinating things that we find in the record of the past. I read numerous archaeology papers a week, and I love it. I love the field. I love the idea of being able to parse when something was built by comparing where it was found to other items of the same layer. I love the idea of using multiple lines of evidence to form a robust timeline. I love asking a flint knapper if they think a stone is possibly a lithic specimen and why they feel the way they do. But for all my love of the field, I have slowly found the vast majority of archaeologists who take the time to communicate about pseudoarchaeology are insulting and dismissive. Now, as a result, I have a vastly different view of the field than I did just a year ago. When speaking to a pyramidiate like me, the limitations of the field are almost never properly portrayed. Racism is almost always brought up, and all with condescension flavoring this discourse. Now, I'm not writing to tattle on these archaeologists, is why I'm not naming them for one reason. They have their rights to express themselves, and I don't want to curtail that. I do, however, think their actions should be professionally discouraged and would point out that they are openly undermining the core intention of the founding of the SAA. To quote Carl E. Guthe, the first Secretary Treasurer and one of the founding members of the SAA, "I feel that American Indian archaeology has many friends, and we are anxious to become acquainted with them. At the suggestion of one of them, the idea of a National Society for American Archaeology came into being. Its purpose is to make it possible for everyone, professional and non-professional alike, to become acquainted with the story in which all are interested. I put it to you that some of the most passionate amateurs are alternate history buffs, and their numbers are not small. By neglecting them, or worse, insulting them in your public discourse, the SAA has thrown gas on a fire that it claims to want to quench. I hope I am well understood here, just as I hope to see better outreach from the SAA in the future." Now, this seems far more effective to me than going full hate mob. Of course, time will tell, but at least I'll be able to sleep at night, right? And I don't feel like a huge hypocrite because I'm like, oh, these guys suck for being underhanded. Let's go get underhanded. And I would encourage you out there to follow suit here. If you find my letter inadequate and don't want to, like, repost it and send it to those guys a second time, write your own letter. Say what you have to say. Just remember that, like, you know, the more personal attacks and the less evidence-based it is, the worse it looks. Even though that's what they're doing. That's the whole strength that we have. The more they come emotional and the more that we come with evidence, the better we look, because they claim that that's the opposite of how it is. So when you write a letter, or if you write a letter, keep the evidence high on the list and the emotions non-existent, if at all. Just show a little humanity and that's that. Now, keep in mind here, we're not trying to get people necessarily deplatformed. What we're trying to do here is rein in all the insanity. If they're going to say, aha, this is the opinion of archaeologists, they need to be properly portraying the limits of their field to the interested amateurs, kind of like their bylaws say they should be. Now, big thanks to all my Patreon supporters, especially you, Doug. You know who you are, because, well, your name's Doug. But thank you guys so much, especially you, because you help me make this keep going, even when I might otherwise have needed to drop everything and steer the ship a different direction. I can keep on trucking this way because of the support from people like yourselves. So thank you very much. I appreciate you so much, and we will see you next time.